Matt, give us your scenario. As we slowly run out of oil, what's going to happen? I mean, are we seeing the reflection, for example, at the pumps now? How much time do you think we have? And then just kind of paint the scenario for us.
You ever see Mad Max?
Oh, yes.
That's pretty much an accurate description of where we're already at least on an international level.
My first exposure, of course, to Mel Gibson in a very strange movie.
Yeah. If you look at the plot of The Road Warrior, you had people riding around in the desert shooting each other over oil, and the villain was this real big, ugly guy named Lord Humongous. Well, what's going on in Iraq right now? You've got people riding around the desert fighting each other over oil. In New Orleans, when it collapsed, the Superdome turned into the Mad Max Thunderdome in about 48 hours.
Yep, two go in, one comes out. Remember that?
Yeah. So, I guess my point is, being facetious, but the point is we're already falling apart. It's just that many of us who are here in the States still live in, what you could call pockets of wealth, for lack of a better word. So we can sort of, pretend that it's not going on, and we can ignore the signs all around us while the world just plunges, head first into total chaos. Here in the U.S., our problem is not so much the peak of production, but the peak of exports, because we import 75% of our oil. And so the oil, people think, well, oil production will drop by 2-3% per year. Gee, maybe we can finagle some things and get by for a few years. That ignores that there's probably going to be further disruptions due to war and terrorism, radical weather patterns. And then on top of that, there will be even further disruptions because a lot of the exporters probably will decide that they want to keep some of the oil for their children and not sell it to us. So we're looking at, a defective decline rate, probably closer to 7-10% per year, which would cut the overall supply by half in about 7 years. And we're talking total. We're talking economic collapse on a scale that really none of us are familiar with.
Worldwide,
really relate to. So, I don't want to scare people or anything, but we're talking about total full blown meltdown, basically.
And isn't it ironic that we're seeing this incredible increase of the price of oil per barrel at a time when we're in this massive credit crunch. Companies are laying off thousands of people. The stock market took it on the chin today, and albeit 360 points is not like 360 points in 1987, but it's still a pretty big drop for a day because of uneasiness. I mean, all this is going on, and we're still continuing to spend billions of dollars in Iraq. How can this continue?
Well, the sad truth is that money always seeks the highest return. And right now, and for the foreseeable future, and I'm saying this not that I like it.
It's obviously you don't.
But there's more money to be made by investing in new killing technologies than there is in new energy technologies. And we live in a market-based system where money seeks the highest return. That's where the money's going to go, wherever it can make the most on itself. And right now, that's in war and in fighting over the remaining oil, not switching to, switching to a more modest lifestyle that we could maybe support with some of these alternatives.
And creating a peaceful planet.
Yeah. Now, the other problem is, if we're honest with ourselves, you look around, most Americans really don't have any desire to actually make any degree of sacrifice and actually change your lifestyle. Because if it was even possible for us to navigate this in some sort of reasonable, peaceable manner, we're not going to do it just by plugging ethanol into all of the cars or biodiesel or some other techno wonder. It would require major sacrifice on the part of people. And we, the last 20 to 30 years or so, the idea of sacrifice or anything like that has just gone completely out the window. And you've got an entire generation raised on a 50 cent motto of get rich or die trying.
Explain this one for me, Matt. Here we have Venezuela with Hugo Chavez sending us oil. I think Venezuela is, our third biggest supplier of oil? Is that
you know, I don't recall
it.
Exactly.
I think it is. So we,
it's one of the top ones.
He hates this government, yet he continues to trade with us. It's money, big money. And, you know, he's got thousands and thousands of gasoline stations here, of which he's changed the name in order to try to minimize, I guess, a public relations problem. But my point is how can somebody hate us so much and we still do business with him?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting irony. You know, I'm kind of agnostic on Hugo Chavez. What I do think is pretty ironic is that, okay, the social programs they have there in Venezuela are supported by the high price of oil. Well, one of the reasons the price of oil is so high is because of Bush's disastrous foreign policy and adventures in Iraq has added a instability premium. So in a really weird, ironic way, let me back up there.
Yeah, but what if they wanted the oil prices to be this high? So everything that's happening was done on purpose.
If Venezuela wanted the oil prices?
No. What if our administration wanted the oil prices to be this high? So though you may think it's a disastrous foreign policy, it could be, if that was the goal, brilliant.
Oh, well, no, I think, I was just making a point that Hugo Chavez hates Bush, but Hugo Chavez's social programs are in part dependent on Bush's energy policy because that's helped jack up the price of oil.
Right.
So there's kind of a weird irony there. Now, as far as does the administration want prices this high, I would think that, yeah, they probably do because they know where their bread is buttered, and that's the energy industry, and the high prices have help the energy industry. So I don't think that that's an unreasonable line.
Well, this is what they do, Matt, and they've done this to us all the time, and I think people are getting fed up with it. They raise it so high, and the pumps have gone up a little. I haven't seen, and I want to ask you this in a second, but they, you know, it gets up so high, and then they lower it a little bit, and we think we're getting a deal. So here we are with oil knocking on the door of $100 a barrel. How come we haven't seen the explosion at the pump yet?
Well, because we're right in between the summer driving season, which has passed, but we haven't quite gotten to the winter where all the heating oil has to be generated. So the folks who are selling gasoline, or the refiners and the in-sellers, are basically just having to eat the cost because there's less demand. I mean, that's just kind of basic market forces. Now, if oil had shot up to 100 in June or July, then gas would probably be $4.50 a gallon by now. So now I understand people. If you want to understand the oil company conspiracies, if there is any conspiracy, it's not one of artificial scarcity. It's one of artificial abundance, because when people perceive artificial abundance, they're more likely to, for instance, buy a big SUV, and then they have to buy more oil to fuel the SUV, or to buy a big suburban home out in the middle of nowhere or out in the far-flung suburbs. Then they have to buy more heating oil to heat the thing, and they have to drive further out to go get it. So the oil, you know, and the oil companies and the media and the, you know, big automakers, there is conspiracies, or maybe I don't even know if there's necessarily active conspiracies, but there is shenanigans going on. But I don't think it's just that it's not in the way that most people understand. Most people think, well, they just decide to jack the price up a click or down a click, but it's a little more complex than that.